Now, till here, it still remains quite abstract. But now the Alter Rebbe adds a line. Ubazeh yuvan heitev. With this introduction, one will clearly understand. He says, yuvan heitev. You'll be able to understand very well, or you'll be able to understand well, mashakasuv, what the verse says, ki Hashem elekecha eish eichlohu. That the Lord your God, Hashem your God, is a consuming fire. In Parshas Veschana, in Perek Dalet, in verse 21, Moshe Rabbeinu speaks to the Jewish people. And he forewarns them against idolatry. He says, Yishamru lechem pentishkichu es brus Hashem alekeichem. Be careful, perhaps you forget the covenant that Hashem has made with you. And in the next pasuk he adds, 424, the first pasuk is 423, he adds, Ki Hashem alekecha eish eichlohu keil kana. For Hashem your God is a consuming fire, a very sensitive God. Literally, what is the meaning of the pasuk, Hashem your God is a consuming fire? So we always translate it, you know, Moshe is telling the Jewish people, you better watch out. Because Hashem is, he's a burning flame. He's going to consume you. And background music. And this is the perception that most Jews have when they read these verses, this verse or similar verses. You know, you better watch out. Hashem is there. He's a big fire and he's going to get you. If you misbehave, it's a burning flame and it will consume you. It will demolish you. It will destroy you. In fact, the commentators explain it according to this line of thinking. For example, the Ramban, Nachmanides, writes that Moshe Rabbeinu is pointing out here the attribute of Midas Hadin, the attribute of judgment, and this is what he means by a consuming fire. And the other commentators share similar ideas. But here, we come in contact with a whole new type of approach. The meaning of this verse from a Kabbalistic, from a Hasidic point of view. And Alter Rebbe says, "Bazeh yuvan heitev." Through this we'll be able to understand well what it means that Hashem, your God, is a consuming fire. And what is the meaning? So here itself, it's difficult to hear on its own, you know, independently, it's difficult to understand. But the Alter Rebbe does point out that he explains it elsewhere, in other places, he explains it more clear. And even here, if you reflect upon the meaning of the words, I think we could comprehend what the Alter Rebbe is saying. What is fire? Fire is eish eichla. Fire consumes. Fire is a type of existence. It's an interesting type of existence. Unlike other existences, it can only exist if it consumes something. Huh? The ultimate carnivore. It's the ultimate carnivore. A rock, a stone, doesn't burn. You can put a rock, you can light a rock on fire, strike a match and light a rock, because a rock refuses to be consumed. A rock, the way it was created, doesn't have the properties that allow it to be demolished and its oxygen removed and its molecules redirected through fire, and therefore fire could not have a relationship with it. Unless it's a volcano. A volcano, yeah. I know there are exceptions. Wood, under ordinary circumstances, wood, twigs, cloth, wicks, they produce fire. Why do they produce fire? Because fire needs to burn something. Fire needs to consume something. For fire to exist, it needs to demolish. It needs to consume. It needs to absorb. Without anything yielding its substance to the flame is extinguished. A flame can't exist in a vacuum on its own. I'm burning. It needs to eat something up. Something has to yield itself. Something has to nullify its identity and annihilate its identity for the flame to exist. Comes Moshe Rabbeinu and declares, Ki Hashem Melekecha Eish Eich Lohu. Hashem, your God, is a consuming fire. Listen to the words. Hashem Melekecha. Hashem, your God, is a consuming fire. Hashem can exist in you. Hashem can become your God only if it's an Eish Eich Lohu. Hashem Elokecha Eish Eich Lohu. For God to exist as your God, for Hashem to exist as your Hashem, it needs to consume something in you. It's an Eish Eich Lohu. That's the existence of Hashem Elokecha. It exists only if Eich Lohu, only if it consumes something. How do I know that God is my God, that I have a relationship with me? That I have a relationship with Him, if I can point to a certain part of my life and say, this is what I gave up today for Hashem. This part of me was yielded. This part was burnt up. If nothing was annihilated, if nothing was challenged, if I stand like this, I lick an ice cream or I come out of shul, and I say, ah! The Lord is beautiful, and I'm beautiful. The flame of Hashem is not there. If there was no Eichla, the flame of Hashem is not there. There's a story that illustrates this. The previous Lubavitcher Rebbe told a story that he heard from his father. It's quite an interesting episode. He heard it from his father in Tofresh Nunalev at a vort of his aunt, of his father's sister. Tofresh Nunalev would mean 1891. His father told a story. He was 11 years old. The previous Rebbe was 11 years old, but he remembered the story. That he once, one of his travels outside of Russia, he visited a museum. And in the museum, there was an art gallery that featured many famous portraits. And it also featured three paintings of Raphael. Raphael was one of the greatest Renaissance artists. He was an artist, an architect. He was an Italian artist, an architect. He died in 1520. And he died a young man, I think 37. We have here an artist, right? So the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe told the story. He went to see the portraits of Raphael. And he described three portraits that he saw in the museum. And one of the portraits the Rebbe described was as follows. A huge field. Half of the field was sown with wheat and half with barley. Raphael's portrait depicts a beautiful sunny day. The field is luminescent, is splendorous. It's springtime, so the grain is ripe. On the side of the field, there's a path for people to walk through. In the half of the field that is sown with barley, the Rebbe described, you can recognize in the portrait a light wind that is causing the stalks of barley to sway like waves of an ocean. But the part of the wheat that's sown with the part of the field that's sown with wheat, you do not recognize any wind, even the slightest wind affecting them and casting its pressure on them. On the contrary, the stalks of wheat are all standing erect, firm, tall, and strong, splendorous.
Robust.
He describes further. Upon one of the stalks of wheat stands a little beautiful bird. On the side of the field, there is a huge tree that Raphael painted, that he drew, with lots of branches, extremely colorful, and on one of the branches stands a black raven. On the bottom of the tree, there is a little mountain that ants created. And three steps away, there is a turtle, the Rebbe described, that is warming its body to the heat of the sun. Thousands of people, particularly artists, scholars, want-to-be artists, visited this portrait, and every one of them, the Rebbe Rashab said, was blown away by its realness, its power of deception, so to speak, its richness. And everybody said, you look at the painting, you feel like you're a farmer standing in your field and enjoying that moment. And then the Rebbe told the story. It's unclear from the story if he was there then or he just heard the story when he was in the museum. I assume the latter is correct. That's what I would assume. One day, a peasant, a farmer from Russia, came by to the museum and he gazes at the portrait and he's scratching his forehead for a few moments, reflecting upon it. And then he shouts, he says, "Nie pravda." This is a pure distortion. This is not a true portrait. And he's laughing. The artist doesn't know what he's doing. Potret nie pravda. Pravda means emes. Nie pravda. It's not emes. It's false. It's inaccurate. It's a hallucination. It's not real. So the officers of the museum come out and they see this lowly peasant scoffing at Raphael's portrait. One of the officers tells him, "How dare you? You illiterate, you unsophisticated peasant. You know, Dubis Gevarin, I'm even on portraits. You're an expert on portraits. What has this world come to?" And he's scoffing at him. And the Rebbe tells the story, but there's a group of intelligent people, intelligent artists who came to visit the museum and the art gallery, and they saw what was going on. So one of them approached the assembly of the peasant with the officers of the museum, and he hears the officers laughing. He says, "What's going on?" They tell him the story, so he also begins laughing. And he returns to his friends who came to visit the art gallery. But a little while later, they see the peasant standing with a group of visitors. And the Rebbe describes, in his left hand, he has a hat. He's holding a hat, his hat. Full of passion and sincerity, he's pointing with his right finger to a particular place in the portrait, a particular point in the portrait, and he's pointing to it. And they're all listening, and it seems like they're accepting what he says. And more than that, he says he was so sincere about it that every few minutes he says he was a Russian, he was a Christian. So every few minutes he says, every few minutes on his chest he was doing the cross to show that he means it sincerely. You know, you could just imagine the scene. So one of the artists decided that there's something to it. He tells the other guys, "I'm going over, I have to see what he says." And he comes over, and there's a major debate. And one person is telling the peasant, how can you question Raphael's power, his accuracy? And the peasant is screaming. He says, Raphael is Raphael, but the portrait is not a portrait. Raphael could be Raphael, but portrait na pravda, the portrait is not a portrait. Why not? So he explains. What was the problem? What was the distortion? Nobody can figure it out besides him. He had to be a farmer. He went on, the Rebbe described. He says, everything is beautiful. Everything is real. Everything is natural. The barley and the wheat and the sun and the wind causing the barley to sway and not the wheat to sway, and the raven and the tree and the ant and the turtle and the pathway. It's all perfect, impeccable, a reflection of reality. But he says one thing. He says, Raphael doesn't know what a real field is. He's not a farmer. Why? All the stalks were erect, identically, we said. And on one of them, there's a bird. But the stalk upon which the bird was standing needed to be dented. He says, a bird, I don't care if it was very light and very small, the weight of the bird had to cause this particular stalk to be bent a little bit. The fact that it remained erect, robust, firm, straight, identically with all the other ones, he says, it's not real. The Rashab, Rebbe Rashab continued to describe the other paintings. One was a war and one was a court case. And he said at that particular gathering, as I gained a lot, very much, from gazing at these paintings, because the Baal Shem Tov says that everything is a lesson in our spiritual life. Chassidim explained the lesson in this particular one. That if the portrait is to be real, there has to be a dent. Hashem Elokecha Eish Eichlo. If a Jew serves Hashem, apparently, he learns Torah and he observes mitzvahs, but there's no dent. If the stalk is erect, the stalk of wheat, the stalk of his animal soul is erect and firm, he may be a beautiful portrait, but he's not real. He may be a beautiful bird and a beautiful piece of wheat, but there's no flame of the Shekhinah. Hashem Elokecha Eish Eichlohu. If Hashem is to be your God, it's a fire that consumes. It has to hurt. It has to touch you. Something of your animal soul has to be burnt. Hashem has to eat something. He has to consume something. Something has to be absorbed in Shekhinah. And this is, I think, the first time the Alter Rebbe makes this point in Tanya. This is the Chiddush here in Tanya. That the relationship and the link, the point of convergence between Hashem and the world, does not occur through godliness revealing itself. It is achieved through something nullifying itself in the world. To bring Hashem into your life is not achieved by Hashem revealing Himself. Hashem Elokecha Eish Eichlohu, it's achieved by one part of your life becoming a wick. By the person surrendering something of himself, yielding something of his substance, that, denting himself. That is what brings in the flame of the Shekhinah. The tzaddik does this. The tzaddik, we understand how he does this. The tzaddik can point to his animal soul, to his animal characteristics and his emotions, and show how they have been transformed. The beinoni can't do that. It's beyond him to transform all of his animal characteristics and emotions. But you know what the beinoni could do, and you know what the beinoni does? The beinoni says, today I had a craving that was unhealthy and immoral, and I rejected it. Eish Eichla. Since I know that I'm really divine, Since I know that there's a God in the world and I'm really spiritual and that is my calling in life, I took the impulse, I took the craving and I rejected it. I did not consciously engage my thought in that unhealthy, immoral craving. I allowed my thought to remain loyal to divinity. What happened now? Eish Eichla. He burnt his animal soul. The Beinoni can say, I had an horrible, ugly impulse, and I smacked it in its face. Eish Eichlohu. He burned something of his animal. He took his darkness, he took his dark veil, he took his dark, opaque consciousness, and he pierced it, he broke it, he devastated. The Beinoni could say, today I craved to say something that was negative and immoral and ungodly, and I rejected it. I had an urge, I had a lust, I had a desire, I had a taiva, and I did not follow through in my deeds or in my thoughts or in my words. Or on the contrary, I did not desire to do something and I did it. Whenever the Beinoni serves Hashem, he struggles, he fights. What is he doing? He's burning something. He's taking the animal in him. He's taking the demon in him. He's taking the bitterness in him. He's taking the darkness in him. And he's burning something in it. Something of it is becoming a wick. Its entire essence is being consumed? No. But its functions are being consumed. And this is the Beinoni that Alter Rebbe describes here. This is the Beinoni that applies to us. We may never cause our entire animal soul to become a pure wick that goes up in the divine flame. But the human being is a lamp of Hashem. The body and the animal soul is the wick. The fire is the Shekhinah. The oil are the mitzvahs. And we need to nourish the flame of the Shekhinah by giving it material that it can consume. And what is the material that burns? This, the Alter Rebbe says, applies to every human being. What does the Beinoni do? What can we do? We can't transform ourselves into spiritual, splendorous people. But every single moment of our life, every single day of our life, we can take something of our animal and make it a wick that is annihilated, that is consumed in divinity. A thought of the animal soul, of the power of speech of the animal soul, the power of deed of the animal soul. And when the Beinoni takes that and he burns it, he ignites his animal soul and in the entire world with the light of the Shekhinah. He dips the wick in the oil, he dips the wick in the mitzvahs, and he ignites the flame. With no wick, there is no flame. Without the challenge to the animal, even the divine soul will not have the light for the Shekhinah. This is the Chiddush of Alter Rebbe here. If the divine soul wants the flame of the Shekhinah, it needs Eish Eichla. Something has to burn. It's only in the experience, in the struggle, in the challenge that it poses to the animal soul, where the Tzaddik and the Beinoni can turn their lives into a wick that can ultimately bring the flame and then through oil, sustain the flame. By the way, to conclude, this is one of the secrets behind the story of which story? The burning bush. Think about it. The snare. Based on an amazing insight, Alter Rebbe once said, he had a debate in Minsk with the Misnagdim, with the opponents to Chassidim. Based on what he said then, what happens to the burning bush? Vayera Malach Hashem Elav Balaba Seish Mitei Chasna. An angel of Hashem appears to Moshe from the midst of a burning bush. Vayar, Moshe observes, Vihine Hasne Boyer Ba'esh Vasne Inenu Ukal. The thorny bush, the snare is thorny, is burning with fire. The angel of God is in that flame, but it's not being consumed by the flame. Vayomer Moshe, Surono Ve'eres Amara Gadla. Moshe says, let me step forward and gaze upon this great sight. Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who says, Hashem Elokecha Eish Eichlohu, in Parshas Veschana. Moshe Rabbeinu in the first division that will qualify him as the Rebbe of the Jewish people, coming down from his state as an isolated heavenly tzaddik to become a leader that will redeem the Jewish people from their enslavement, the person who understood more than anybody that for God to be your God, he has to be an Eish Eichla, like the Baal Shem Tov once interpreted the Pasuk, very different. You know what the Baal Shem Tov said on the Pasuk, Hashem Elokecha Eish Eichla? He said, God is vi fire, Hashem is like fire. With fire is one of two things. Either you stay away from it, you don't have a relationship with it. But if you go into it, you have to be completely burnt. There's no such a thing, I'll say, okay, I'll put my arm in the fire, I'll let my arm, it doesn't happen. Either you have no relationship with the fire, you stay afar, you get a little of its rays of its heat. If you want the fire, you have to be ready to submit completely. Hashem Elokecha, he said, what is godliness? Either stay away, don't have God. If you want God, God has to become everything. In simple language, it means, if God is not everything, he's nothing. So Moshe Rabbeinu understands that. Suddenly he sees a new vision. He sees that the flame of the Shekhinah, Malach Hashem, is burning in a thorn bush and it's not even ready to be consumed completely. That moment, Moshe Rabbeinu learned how to become a Rebbe of the Jewish people. He learned the secret of the Beinoni, not of the Tzaddik. He learned the secret of the ordinary man, of the Alter Rebbe's hero. The Beinoni is the Jew who refuses to be burnt up in the divine flame. The Beinoni says no to God. The Beinoni says, I'm not going to give up my identity. We all know that. The Beinoni can be inspired, and the Beinoni can be spiritual, and the Beinoni is religious, and the Beinoni doesn't sin. But the Beinoni still refuses to surrender the last vestige of ego, unlike the Tzaddik. The Beinoni still, okay, he refuses to become totally other-centered rather than self-centered. The Tzaddik becomes totally divine-centered. There's no self-centeredness. The Beinoni is incapable of doing it and therefore refuses to do it. I should say a part of the Beinoni refuses to give up its hold on itself. The Beinoni still has an animal consciousness that wants to sin and wants to gossip and wants to engage in immoral relationships and wants to lie and wants to hate and is envious and is political and is egocentric. There's that part and it's not hasnei nenuuko. It's not being burnt up. For most teachers of spirituality, you don't have a real relationship with God. This is not the spiritual human being Hashem wanted. Hashem Elokecha, Eish Eichlu. So you know what Hashem tells Moshe? Shal ni alecha me'ar raglecha. Ki amokei masherata oimed alav admas kodeshu. Remove your shoes from your legs because the place upon which you're standing is holy soil. Despite the inner conflict, and despite the fact that Hashem never really lives in his totality. I'm sorry, Hashem never lives in the totality of the heart of the Beinoni. Shal ne'alecha me'al raglecha. This is a space of holiness. And he personifies and embodies a space of holiness. Because this is ultimately the justification for the Beinoni's life. Not only the justification for the Beinoni's life, the justification for the Beinoni to celebrate his life. That despite the turmoil and the conflict and the ups and downs and the darkness and the demons and the ugliness, at every single moment of his life, he surrenders something of the animal within, and thus at every single moment of his life, he has the Shekhinah burning on the top of his head. This is the justification to the Beinoni's life. When Alter Rebbe said in chapter 35, what's the point? What's the point? Your whole life, you're struggling in vain. And he said, Tehizos nachamasam kiflayim letishia, b'ashem ha-sheichin itam b'seich terosam v'avedosam. Let them be comforted, double-folded, in a double-folded manner, in Hashem who dwells within them, in their turn and in their work and in their struggle. Here he brings it to culmination. There's an oichla, there's a kilyon, there's a wick. The Beinoni is burning something. I know not the totality. But a thought, a word, a deed, those elements of the animal soul could have easily been consumed by his egotistical nature. And he gives them away to his divine soul. There the Shekhinah dwells. That's the wick in which the Oyer HaShekhinah, ultimately the Beinoni, every moment of his life, becomes that human being who carries on the top of his head the flame of Hashem, even though inside there may be a war zone. And this is what makes Moshe a Rebbe for the Jewish people. Moshe didn't want to do that. Moshe wants to be a tzaddik. He doesn't need to deal with Dosan and Avirams and Kairach. So Sefeltum Nishtais. Now they weren't baining him exactly. But Sefeltum Nishtais that. He had to appreciate the Kedusha. He had to appreciate the achievement. He had to appreciate that the raison d'etre of existence is fulfilled in the life and in the struggle of the Beinoni. Not only in the Tzaddik. The Dira B'tachtoinim, the Shekhinah coming down into the world, creating the world of Mashiach that he described in 36 and 37, that is achieved in the world of the Beinoni. So you could say that the Beinoni maybe loses the battle, but he wins the war. The Beinoni loses the battle, but he wins the war. Nice. And Alter Rebbe concludes, "Ukamesha Kasa v'makamacher," as is explained elsewhere in other discourses of the Alter Rebbe in Lukut Teira and Teira Ei. He explains this pasuk. That for Hashem to be Elikecha, Hashem has to be Eish Eichla. The flame of divinity needs to consume and burn and annihilate something within the human nature. I always found it quite telling that Alter Rebbe finishes Ukamashakasav Makamacher, as is explained elsewhere. The whole time as is explained elsewhere. That itself, I think, is a very powerful message. It's part of the message of Eish Eichlohu. The moment one feels smug, I have it all here. There's Taka a story, I'll conclude here. There's the story that it's a Gevalde Kamais. So story with Alter Rebbe, a beautiful story. It was once Simchas Torah. When the Maggid of Mizrich passed away, the Alter Rebbe accepted as his personal mentor one of the senior disciples of the Maggid, Reb Menachem Mendel of Haradok. He is the author of a well-known work, Pri Haaretz, also known as Reb Mendel of Vitebsker, and he traveled to him for many years until Reb Mendel of Haradok made Aliyah together with 300 Hasidim to the Holy Land, and the Alter Rebbe accompanied them. But at the last moment, Reb Mendel HaRadaka convinced the Alter Rebbe to stay behind and to become the leader of the Hasidim in Lithuania and White Russia, which he did. But he really wanted to leave. He wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael with them. But for many years, the Alter Rebbe would go to him. He made Aliyah. I mean, he went up to the Holy Land in Tavkuf Lamed Zayin, which means 1777, and the Maggid passed away in 1772. So 5 years later, so for a few years, the Alter Rebbe would travel to him. 1 year, Simchas Torah, it was before Hakafas, and Reb Menachem Mendel of Haradok, the holy Reb Mendel Haradok, would not come out to Hakafas. He was locked in his room, and he's not appearing. And many, many guests have come for Simchas Torah to be with the Rebbe, and they were extremely disappointed. They're waiting for a half an hour and an hour and 2 hours, and he's not appearing. He's secluded in his room, and they're all waiting to recite the Atah HaReisa, you know, the verses of Atah HaReisa before they would take out the Torah scrolls and dance. But he's not emerging. So they approached Alter Rebbe, knowing his unique personality and knowing the love that Reb Mendel HaRadok had towards the Alter Rebbe, they said, maybe you can go into the room of the Rebbe and see what is going on. So the Alter Rebbe did that. He knocked on the door and he walked into the room, and he sees that Reb Mendel HaRadok is deeply engrossed in his thoughts and in his meditation. His face is flaming, his face is aglow with spiritual fire, and he's deeply engrossed in meditation. So the Alter Rebbe says, he says, the Chassidim await you. Why don't you join them for Hakafas? So the Mendel HaRadaka said that there are 100 meanings to the verse, Ata HaReisel Adas Ki Hashem Hu Alekim Ein Od Muvada. There are 100 interpretations to that verse with which we begin Hakafas. I don't yet fully understand them all, and I also have not yet applied them to my life and allowed them to transform me. How can I go out and recite the verse of Ata HaReisa without really comprehending and being affected by its significance, by its message, by its energy? I can't. I first have to master and integrate the 100 interpretations of Ata HaReisa. So the Alter Rebbe said, he said, Rebbe, when you will reach a full comprehension of the 100 meanings of Ata HaReisa, you will discover another 100 meanings in Ata HaReisa that you didn't comprehend yet. And he gave an example. He says, sometimes a person is walking, and from the far, you see a huge, beautiful mountain. And it seems like there is a remote distance between you and the mountain, but in your imagination, you feel, it looks like the mountain is at a particular place, and you feel that if I go this and this amount of space, I will reach the mountain, I will touch the mountain. And you go there, and you come to that space, and you see that the mountain is far, 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 far beyond you, and the journey begins again, and so it goes on and on. Alter Rebbe says, from here you see 100 meanings. When you'll get there, you'll be able to see that the mountain is really much deeper than what you have even imagined. You'll have another 100 interpretations in Ata HaReisa. So Reb Mendel took to the Alter Rebbe and he said, you're right, Reb Zalman, you. Kum lam against Hakafas. Come, let's go to Hakafas. And he went with Alter Rebbe to Hakafas. So the Alter Rebbe also concludes the Tanya Kamesh, Kasav Makamach, as it's explained elsewhere, apparently telling the learner and the teacher and the researcher and the one who tries to apply Tanya, that there's always a Makam Acher, not only outside of the Tanya, in the Tanya there's the Makam Acher. Or it's like the Alter Rebbe had a chassid whose name was Reb Pinchas Reuzes. Alter Rebbe had a chassid, his name was Reb Pinchas Reuzes, and another chassid, his name was Reb Binyamin Klatzke. They learned by the Alter Rebbe, but they were two wealthy businessmen. They would travel each year to Leipzig in Germany for the market, for business, merchant. They would sell merchandise. One in Leipzig, they used to have their own minyan. The Chassidim would have their own minyan. Once a German Jew came into their minyan, and he was a German Jew, so he never experienced such a davening, such a fiery, passionate davening. So he was very, very impressed. So after davening, he goes over to Rabbi Yamin Kleske, one of the Chassidim of the Alter Rebbe, and he says, Binyamin, I mean, what a beautiful davening, an amazing davening. But one question, we all have a custom that on the shtender is engraved the words, Dalif ne mi ata oimet. Know before whom you stand. And why is it that in your minyan, in your shul, you don't have that on your shtender, Dalif ne mi ata oimet? And it's really, really turned me off from you. And even though I love your praise, but I don't think I can come back because, you know, you're missing such a major component, and why would you change at this beautiful tradition? And so forth. So Binyamin Klotzker asked him, he said, Rabbi, do you know what Dalif Ne'mi Ata'imid means? So he says, of course I know what it means. The Gemara says in Brachas, a person should know before whom he stands. Know before whom you stand. In other words, you stand before Hashem. So Binyamin said, let me explain to you the deeper meaning. He said, me, he said in Yiddish, in German, he said, me meint verstand. The word me, in Kabbalah, in Chassidus, me is identified with Bina, understanding. Me, the word me, what, who? Because me is the numerology of 50, Mem and Yud is 50, corresponding to the 50 gates of understanding. And me, generally, with the question, me, who, is a symptom of Bina, of reasoning, of analysis, of comprehension. So Rabbi Binyamin said, Da, lifnei mi ata aimet. When you start davening, zolst du wissen, as lifnei mi ata aimet, du stehst far mi, du stehst far in verstand. You should know that you stand before understanding. You stand in a space that is prior to understanding. Da, you should know, lifnei mi at limit, when you get up to Davin, remember that lifnei mi, you're still before me, you still haven't scratched the surface of understanding the essence, understanding the truth. So he says like this, that the person himself should know this before Davening is obligatory, but he should hang up a sign and show it to everybody. He says, das is a cherpa. That's embarrassing. He says, to hang up a sign and show everybody. he said, this is a cherpa. So that's perhaps the deeper commercial cost of a makam acher. That's part of the Eish Oichel, commercial cost of a makam, that a person always needs to struggle to challenge himself and every day burn up another element. But the moment he becomes content or smug, he's not a wick anymore. There's no Eish Oichel, there's no Hashem Alekech. Now, the Rebbe finishes Nishlam Chelik Rishon. This concludes the first part of Tanya Be'ezras Hashem Yisbarach V'Yisala. With the help of Hashem, may He be blessed and exalted. Chazak, Chazak, V'Nitzchazek. I just wanted to announce, if I can have your attention for a moment, that next week, March 17th, the fourth day of Nissan, there will not be a class. I will be out of town. But the following Sunday, which is March 24th, the 11th day of Nissan, we will be celebrating here a grand siyum, a celebration for the completion of the first section of Tanya. And during that siyum, if anybody would like to share any of their experiences during the learning, that would be lovely. Also, I would like to give a synopsis, go through every chapter, give one sentence for each chapter of the 53 chapters of Tanya, but it shouldn't take 6 years. Just take like synopsis in 25 minutes of 6 years. And then we'll have a siyum, but we'll also include a farbrengen for Pesach, and also that day at Aleph Nissen marks 100 years of the birth of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. So that's going to be Sunday evening, March 24th, the same time, 8:30. And I wanted to ask if you know anybody who has been here through the course of the years at any point during the class, if you could please invite them to attend that celebration of the Siyum. Have a wonderful... That's nice, and I would suggest if you can talk to Rabbi Kleinman. You know Rabbi Kleinman? He runs this place. He's in the office there. He's a man with a red beard, a tall man with a red beard, and you can offer it to him. I'm sure that would be very much appreciated. Okay, so you can give him money. He's taking care of it.
Just on that one, came down from Shemayim.
90 yen.
Shemayim Nukvin, which is going up. I don't know if there's any Torah.
Oh, why Mon is Mayim Nukvin?
The Mon is, you know, they called it the Mon. In other words, they called it the Mon.
I never saw. I mean, Mon is Lachem and Hashemayim.
Chutz
Mayim Tchurim.
That somehow...
I never saw it.
I remember reading something that the Mayim Nukvin brings the Mayim Duchurim, and then somehow it brings the Mayim Duchurim brings again the Mayim.
Yeah, deeper Mayim. Always, yeah, of course.
It goes like when you put the microphone next to the amplifier, so it starts oscillating, sends a signal in, and then it sends it back, and it goes to infinity.
That's
the same
idea. I'm just wondering.
It's always says Mayan Nukvin evokes Mayan Tchurin. Mayan Tchurin creates a much deeper energy in the Mayan Nukvin, yeah? Of course. It's also physically that way.
So maybe somehow that would answer how the Mayan Nukvin is coming down from there, because somehow it was instigated somehow.
That's possible.
Somehow.
I don't know. I have to look into it. Oh, really? Medishava Parshas Nasa? Blula Bashemen is Maisim Tov Midas Mamish Masim Mitin Zoyares, that's Mitin Yanukim. The Sant. Shalom Aleichem. What is your name? And your last name?
Shuman.
Shuman. Shuman. Where are you from?
I'm from Brooklyn. I'm used to Brooklyn.
That does say.
I see. Okay. Pleasure to meet you. Okay, great. You can always welcome back. Thank you. Thank you. And to you too.
Geshem is
can we get Davin and Maida?
Actually, you see the reverse. Mon you see as the service of the Leila. Right? Yeah. And that's the Pashtun.
Right, that's what I'm saying. The Pashtun.
Actually, when the Shem actually burns the towel,
based on what you were saying, what you were asking before, about the Pesila getting burnt, the Nefesh Avam is.
Yeah.
And then what are you left with? So it was a discussion here. It might be an interesting idea that when he talks about Shekhinah the Pesila, he uses Chiyonis. When he uses the term Kiliyain,
nice.
He uses Nefesh Abamis.
Very nice, very
twice.
Nice.
Twice later, Nefesh Abamis is in relation to Kiliyain. But not that afterward, the process still happens.
Very nice.
But there, it's stripped away from the Bahamas piece.
And it remains Chai.
Chiyonis, that's how they can say it.
Very nice. And he says Pesila, which is not complete.
The concept. No, but this is the process. When he's describing the process, the dynamics.
The Hamas, the Hamas gets stripped out, but you still have the things that's
Machayev. I think it's...
It's not like it gets burnt.
When he says Psila, he uses Chiyunis.
Bahamas remains.
Because the Chiyunis element remains. Later, when he speaks Kilyan, he says Bahamas. Very nice, Diuk. The Kilyan Nefesh of Bahamas. It's a good word.
Kilyan Nefesh Chiyunis is contrary.
The Nefesh HaChiyunis is reoriented. The Nefesh HaBahamas is annihilated. Right, Klois HaNefesh.
But Pesach still holds on to himself, so
that's Chiyunis. The Nefesh HaLikis, like the Nefesh HaLikis.
The Teren is never a country to Gashmi.
Self-awareness doesn't mean ego. There's two things. There's self-awareness and there's ego. It's two separate things. It's necessary to say what you're saying for another reason. You can ask a question. Oil is also consumed in fire. Fire has to consume something. Oil is completely consumed.
That's what's actually getting consumed.
The oil actually gets consumed. I mean, the wick gets scorched.
Until.
It's blackened. I mean, something gets burnt there. And at the end, the whole wick gets burnt. I mean,
but again, because you don't have oil.
Because you don't have oil, yeah. Huh? So, the oil is nullified much more than the wick. But I think there's something interesting here, because there's a difference between the wick and the oil. And that is, the oil is usually not flammable. Right? The wick is a flammable substance. That's A. Second, the oil gets completely nullified. The wick does not get nullified. It gets scorched, it gets blackened, and even later when it gets burnt, there are still ashes that remain. Oil is completely nullified. So it's mamish consistent with what he's saying here.
It's the fuel, but it's not the fuel.
Oil is mitzvahs. Mitzvahs is not a wick. Mitzvahs is godly. It's totally nullified in godliness. Nothing of it remains outside of godliness. Mitzvahs is the shechit. Mitzvahs is ratzon Hashem. It's like oil. Totally gets nullified. The wick is the animal soul. The animal soul, by the Beinoni for sure, even by the tzaddik. There's still the nefesh achyunas, but certainly by the Beinoni, it gets scorched, it gets blackened, the levushim get consumed, but there's still, it retains its identity. On the other hand, dafka the wick can ignite a fire, not oil. Because mitzvahs is not really the eish oichla. Mitzvahs are not, mitzvahs naturally yield to ratzon Hashem. They don't have an identity outside of it. They're not flammable. They're totally consumed. The wick is something distinct. It will not nullify itself, but it becomes flammable. Over there, there's the Eish Eichla. And that's Nefesh HaBahamas. It's the darkness. It's the Choshech HaKlippus. That's what I think.
It's the Pshat. Is associated with the wick.
Right.
Fire
is with the wick, yeah.
The oil fuels.
It.
But combustion happens.
If you want Shechina in the world, you need Eichla. You need a wick.
That's
the part of the wick that's burnt.
That's what he's saying. That's being not totally,
that's where the
nullified
flame is.
But the, isn't the malbushim?
What do you mean totally nullified? It's
the
like burnt.
What is the klois is always applied to nefesh abamis, and then what remains is this beautiful process of the nefesh afikina on the nefesh elikis.
What is the meisim?
That's what you want to get to.
The meisim toivim, the mitzvahs, the meisim, aren't they the malbushim
of the nefesh
Bahamas?
They have to be done with this levush.
So that's what's being transformed.
Right.
The malbushim is being
by the Beinoni, yeah.
Into the
Ur.
Into the Ur. So it's the really it's the malbushim of the.
That's
of
the wick.
But so it's not the actual. It's not the wick itself. It's the mabushim that's being.
That is, it's part of the wick.
Externals of the wick.
That, for the Beinoni, that is the wick. The nefesh Bahamas itself for him is not a wick. It's detached.
Right.
That's not a wick. You're calling the nefesh Bahamas itself a wick. Why are you calling the wick? The levushim, that is the wick.
The levushim are the wick.
Are the wick.
So what's the
Klippa.
It's
not a wick. It's Klippa. It's not a wick.
That has to be close to remain, to leave the wick.
It's Choshech HaKlippus. It's not a wick. It's doing its own thing. It's not a wick. By the tzaddik it's all. That's another inyan. In Chanami. That's by the tzaddik.
That's
how the tzaddik transforms it.
In general, we talk the same. Because one is the source. Bahamas is really a judgment call in relation to the nefesh HaChiyunis.
Right.
Bahamas is what becomes of it. That's how the tzaddik transforms it. If it would be innately bad, you can't transform it. It's not innately bad. Klippas Naiga. But it's before Klippas Naiga is elevated, it's Klippa. It's a husk. It's Choshech. It's bitter. It's like a nut, you know, that has a thick shell, and you have to crack the shell Well, it's not mamash such a thick shell, but it's a shell. Yeah, like in this, from this paedic, you have a lot of stuff. The story with the dent, for example.
At the Gashmi level of that particular case, or
it always moved me that if it's to be a real story, if it was a real portrait,
that he knew the
shock of wheat should have had a dent.
I'm sorry, what?
The stalk of wheat.
The stalk of wheat should have had a dent.
Each one of those are symbolic of something that was going on.
It should have been bent.
I mean, otherwise, you make it.
It was also
the intention. As it is, not human. So that you make it. By the Irishman,
Raphael died in 1520. He was born in 1483.
Okay,
he was an architect, and he was an artist. He lived in Italy. Renaissance.
He was a real Renaissance man.
He was a Renaissance man.
At the height, because the Renaissance he was at the in Italy already in the 1200s.
Yeah, he was at the height of the Renaissance. And the Vart, you know, that... You could be a nice picture, but it's not real. Nie prawda. It's not real. If it doesn't dent, if it doesn't affect the stalk, it's not real. The bird is there, but it's not real. Hashem Elokecha may be there, but it's only in a portrait. It's not real. I mean, it's a very...
I think it also says something about Raphael, and the Renaissance as a whole was trying to bring out the ideals of the highest. They weren't necessarily, you know.
I think it says something about Raphael, yeah.
You know, these people, they were trying to bring out something very, very, a very high idealistic type of reality. And whether it was possible or not is a different issue.
Call him the Asilon Achman and Sharlon Kavase. The Gemara says.
Oh, okay.
The Gemara says whatever is forbidden, it has a counterpart that's permissible. Blood is forbidden and the liver is kosher.
I think the Renaissance is more or less, neutral.
There's it's a good idea. The chiddush of this vart is the b'shas, the beinoni does a physical mitzvah, and he's not in the mood of it, or he utters words with his physical lips and his physical teeth, his physical ones, and he's not in the mood of it. He says Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. With that movement of his lips, or that movement of his arms, or that movement of his legs. What he's doing is he's taking the functions of his Nefesh HaBahamas and he's transforming them into a wick that is being consumed in godliness. And that justifies his life. That justifies his life. Because every moment he's a Neir Hashem Nishmas Adam, a flame that is burning with the divine Shekhinah. Benini gets up, he has a Davah Ma'ariv, he's not in the mood of it. Says Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, using his animal soul. He needs his money, he needs his lips, he needs his teeth, he needs his mouth. These are properties of the animal soul, speaking and action and so on and so forth.
To me, I wasn't here at the very beginning, but Yehuda Dovid Sandik.
Yehuda was here in the beginning.
And he got me tapes in the beginning. And I listened to them when I was living in Florida yet. And to me, the chiddush was is that to have spiritual life without spiritual highs and without spiritual feelings, that was a tremendous chiddush.
To have what
spiritual life without spiritual highs and spiritual feelings. To me, that was a big chiddush because that's what I thought spiritual life was about—to get spiritually high, to go out in the woods and the forest and have a conversation with God and.
To order additional MP3 CDs, call Heichal Menachem at 718 888-633-1076 or visit us at www.chassidus.com. That is chassidus.com.